Continuing the discussion of the motivation for developing the of zehiras or watchfulness. He has said that there are various levels, that the individual who is the highest level of awareness and intelligence will realize that the goal in life is perfection, and that anything that detracts from this is something that he wishes to avoid, and anything that achieves this is something that he wishes to do. And that's the highest level of motivation. The second level of motivation, he appeals to the fact that one's eternal reward will be commensurate with what one does in this world. And he points out human trait of envy, where he says after years of working next door to another person in the office who has either been a co-equal or even better yet, someone inferior to yourself, and yet because the other person has been more diligent and you've been lax in your duties, you wake up one day and you find that he has on his door vice president, and that he is now in a superior position, and you realize, hey, I could have achieved an equal status had I been more diligent and had I not been lazy. And he says it gives you a very unpleasant feeling of why you were negligent. And even worse so if you realize that that is now irreversible and there's nothing you can do about it anymore. He says that's the kind of unpleasant feeling one will achieve, or one will experience in the world to come when one has been lax in doing the service of Hashem in this world, and then realize in the world to come that it is irreversible. Whatever one has not achieved cannot be achieved any longer. And then when one will look around and see that others who one had considered to be of lesser status than oneself have achieved a higher level in Gan Eden. He said this is an extremely distressing situation, and since it is one that is irreversible and eternal, he says one should take into very serious consideration, am I willing to make peace with a situation where my negligence and laxity in doing what I should be doing will result in an irreversible and eternal distress. So he says these are levels 1 and 2. He says, but there are some people who can't even grasp the idea of the eternal reward and the levels of reward, and their motivation is of a much more concrete type. And this is, he says, continuing, for the general populace who may not be able to achieve the levels that we talked about, then their motivation could be, they can relate to reward and punishment, atzmum, the actual reward and punishment for one's deeds, if they will only be aware as to how exacting the divine judgment is. One should constantly be in trembling. How can one ever stand up in the day of judgment? And who can ever justify oneself in front of his Creator? Whose scrutiny will be precise on everything that we have done, and nothing that we've ever done will ever be overlooked. As the Chachamim have said, as the sages have said, Umagid la'oda ma'asechai, referring to the verse in the prophet who says that he will relate to a person all the words that he has spoken. And Chachamim said, Afilo sicha kala she ben ish le ishtai, even a casual conversation that one may have in the privacy of one's own home. If it is any kind of indecent talk, Magidim Leila Odom Bishasadin, this will be told to a person at the Day of Judgment. And essentially all one has to realize is that there is a constant video recording of one's life. And at the Day of Judgment, all they will do is play it back to us. Nothing will escape that video. And we'll have to sit and look at everything in full color and in a perfect 3D sound. We'll have to sit and look at everything we've done from the day we were created. Nothing will be overlooked. Now, with that kind of awareness, I don't even think that one has to think of any kind of punishment as such, other than being confronted with one's own actions. And it'll be bad enough if we are taken into a tiny little cubicle and simply shown, look. But how much worse if they're going to call a jury in to sit on judgment, and we'll have to sit there and let others see how we've behaved, what we've done, what we've said. It's simply going to be an unbearable punishment. Furthermore, he said, there's a verse that says, Usvivav nis'aromeyoid. Now, the actual phrase in Tillim, in Psalms, means that around Almighty there is a violent, raging storm to describe the awesomeness of Hashem's powers. The Talmud takes the word nis'ara as relating to the word se'ol, which is hair, and it interprets this to mean usvivav, those who are immediately surrounding Hashem, meaning the tzaddikim, who are close to him. Hashem judges within a hair's breadth of right and wrong. Melamed shehakadosh baruch hu medag digim chasidav. This means that Hashem sits in judgment on those who are close to him, kichut hasara, that there is not even a hair's breadth of lenience to those who are in the highest position of saintliness and piety. And this stands to reason also that one is a person who is relatively ignorant is not judged with the same demands as a person who you should have known better. So a person who should not have known better can be shown more lenience. A person who should have known better is held to a greater standard of performance. We have in the portion of the Torah where Hashem relates all the kinds of things that will befall Israel if they deviate from the ways of the Torah. And after recounting all of the terrible punishments that will occur, the Torah goes on to say, and I will recall the pact with Yaakov and the pact with Yitzchak and the pact with Avram. Now, apparently this means that in spite of the fact that Hashem will be harsh with us, Hashem will nevertheless recall the kindnesses and the virtues and merits of our ancestors. But then, this pasuk is misplaced. This verse should not be in the midst of a series of harsh warnings. So, the Shalom says that this is it is in context with the rest. And what he's saying is this. He says, a person who was raised in a family where there were, where his environment was such that he never learned how to behave properly, is going to be judged much more leniently than someone who had parents who set a pattern for him, and yet he deviated from that, because he is held to a higher state of performance. So Hashem says, at the time when I will sit in judgment on you, I will remember who your ancestors were. I will remember Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, right? And that will be held against you, right? And you will not be able to claim, yes, but I came from such poor stock, what do you want from me? Right? I say, hey, wait a second, you came from Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, right? You've got the spirit of Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov, and their tradition and whatever, and their heritage. And if you deviated from there, that's the standard that you will be held to. The concept of reward and punishment is one which he says this applies to the lowest level of people who cannot appreciate anything better. And in training our children, reward and punishment is really the way that we teach our children how to behave. A child who cannot understand that running into the street is dangerous is spanked when he runs into the street, because spanking he can't understand that he feels. The abstraction that there may be a car coming is something which the infant cannot perceive. So you can't expect the infant to achieve that level of abstraction, so you spank him, then he understands you don't go in the street. But as a person grows and matures, reward and punishment should not be the motivation for acting properly and avoiding improper behavior. Unfortunately, some people never go beyond certain levels of immaturity and still have to be dealt with concepts of reward and punishment.
But it still is a concept of reward. I mean, the fact that you are satisfied by doing the right thing, that you come to appreciate what you're doing, and you're getting something out of it.
Yeah, ultimately, everything is in terms of reward and punishment. Even level number one is I want to achieve perfection, and one sees perfection as being together with Hashem, and that is a kind of reward.
Right.
But it's a totally different. Obviously, the mature individual who crosses the street carefully and does not run headlong into oncoming traffic, he too wishes to avoid punishment. But it's not someone is going to punish him for doing something hazardous. Right? But he is going to bring upon, he realizes he would bring upon himself the possibility of severe injury or death. So yes, that too is a deterrent. So every deterrent is a punishment, and every incentive is a reward.
So the principle holds true, it's just on what level.
Yeah, but it's a question of, is it reward or punishment intrinsic to the act itself, or something that has to be imposed upon one because he doesn't grasp the good or the harm within the act himself. And so that the mature individual understands the good within the act and the harm within the act. The immature individual needs to be dealt with an external thing because he's ignorant of the good and evil. I thought that this was a little bit of a digression, but this may help us understand the whole saga, the incident of Yitzchak giving the blessings, desiring to give the blessings to Esav, and Yaakov being coerced by his mother to get the blessings. The whole conversation is dialogue is a very interesting one. The Torah tells us that Yitzchak favored Esav and Rivka favored Yaakov, and that itself is difficult. That Yitzchak could have been so deceived by Esau. Our concept of Yitzchak is not that he was so easily duped and that Rivka saw the truth, whereas Yitzchak didn't. So that's question number one as to why did Yitzchak prefer to give his blessings to Esau. Next thing is that Yankel was resistant when Rivka told him, look, you go and disguise yourself as Esav and you get the blessings. Yankel was very resistant, and he said to Yitzhak, if father will discover this ruse, this deception, I will be cursed and not blessed. And then finally, when Yitzhak becomes aware that it was Yaakov in disguise who had the brachas, and he becomes aware of this when Esav enters and he recognizes Esav's voice and realizes that the one preceding him who masqueraded as Esav was Yaakov, it says that Yitzhak trembled terribly. And Rashi says that he trembled terribly because he saw hell opening beneath him. Now, what was so terrible that Yitzhak saw hell opening beneath him? Granted, he was deceived, right? And he gave the brachas to Yaakov rather than Esau. But is that so terrible that he felt as though he was in the depths of hell? And I thought that what we might understand by this is that Yitzhak was not at all deceived. Yitzhak knew very well that Yaakov was a upright person who, as it says, he was a scholar, and that Yaakov was the type of spiritual person that Yitzhak wanted of his children. And Yitzhak knew full well that Esav was a person who was given to temptation, and that Esav lived a life of physical gratifications and had no interest in spirituality at all. Rivka had given up on Esav, and Yitzhak felt that Esav still might be able to be redeemed. Now, he's not going to be a Yaakov. He's not going to be able to recognize the value of good in good itself. But maybe if he could be approached on a more juvenile fashion, and maybe he would be able to understand that. So he called Esav over and he says, look, I want to show you about how you can achieve some reward. Now, I want you to go out and prepare some food for me. That is a mitzvah. The mitzvah of kibud av, mitzvah of being respectful and doing the wishes of one's father, is a mitzvah that was, even before the Torah was given, was logically understood as being a mitzvah. He said, I want you to do this. And in return for that, you will get a reward. I will give you blessings. Okay? So that should be a pattern. You see, if you behave the way you should, you will be rewarded. Now, with Yanko, we didn't have to indulge in that. I mean, that's like bribing a child with a lollipop. If anybody would come over to an adult and say, look, you know, you better go get that tooth filled. And the adult would say, yeah, but I don't like to go to the dentist because the drilling is unpleasant. And they say, well, look, I'll give you a piece of candy if you go. And that would be the ultimate insult. And it's very appropriate for dealing with a child. But when you deal with an adult, you don't deal with a level of juvenile reward and punishment. So Yitzhak, look, with Yaakov, I'm secure. Yaakov is going to be the father of the Jewish people. He understands what spirituality is all about and what the good life is. And with him, I don't have to worry. But this Esav, I just don't want to give up on him. Maybe I can get him to understand reward and punishment and at least let him behave decently with that as a motivation. Well, Rivka overheard this conversation, and she, knowing who Esav was, didn't believe that he was redeemable. She felt Esav was beyond redemption. It just isn't right that he should get any blessings at all. Yaakov deserves them, not Esav. So she told Yaakov this, and Yaakov said, look, mother, I don't go for this, you know. I don't need these kind of, that's not what I'm interested in. And furthermore, she says, you know what would happen if father would recognize this? I mean, it would be a disaster. But of course, Rivka insisted. So Yaakov did what his mother said. When Yitzchak discovered later on, when Esav came in, that it was Yaakov who had received the blessings, that Yaakov had masqueraded, had disguised himself as Esav, because Yaakov came for reward, he says, now wait a minute. I mean, Esav, I knew I had lost. I just was in desperation trying to redeem Esav with this very juvenile kind of thing. But I had thought that Yaakov was beyond that. I thought that Yaakov was not out for external rewards and knew that the good of life was in the act of propriety and life and the goodness of life itself. And if Yaakov comes asking for candy as a reward, right, then I've lost everything. I mean, Esav, I've lost, right? And the one that I thought that I was secure with was Yaakov. Right? But now I find that Yaakov, too, is functioning at an immature level. Right? And he says that's why Yitzchak saw hell opening beneath him, because he felt he was now totally bankrupt. Right? Not knowing that Yaakov had resisted and that Yaakov was merely following his mother's wishes, Yitzchak concluded, hey, Yaakov came asking for a handout. He said, hey, I was thinking that that's the way I got to deal with Esav, and I thought that Yaakov was far beyond that. So the concept of reward and punishment is a last resort. It's the way we operate with children, with juveniles, not with mature adults. So he says that, look, level three of motivation is something that applies only to people who cannot understand that there are better reasons for motivation than this. And then he says, well, we also then have to understand how severe and how exacting the divine system of judgment can be, and that even the greatest and most deserving people have to answer for any infractions, and that one cannot say, well, I will do whatever I like, and the merciful God is going to overlook this. There is no overlooking. We have to understand forgiveness also as a process that fits in within the divine system of justice, but not that God overlooks. Nothing is overlooked, and particularly with people of greater spirituality and greater awareness of Hashem, even minute things are overlooked. So one can never take refuge and say, I will do what I like, but my infractions will be overlooked. To be continued. We had concluded yesterday with Lozzato saying that for the individual who is unable to be motivated either by a goal of perfection or an understanding that if one does not achieve anything in this world, one will be lacking reward in the world to come, and one will feel distressed at his failure to have achieved when others are given greater reward. And then he says, when you finally come down to the one who can't achieve any of these abstractions, you have to deal with him on a more juvenile level that he can understand, which is reward and punishment. Then he said, closes off by saying that with people who are particularly observant and particularly spiritual, the precision and the demand is even greater, and that infractions done by people who are of a high spiritual level are judged even more harshly. And his emphasis on this is that one should not deal lightly with violations of Torah and mitzvahs and assume that, well, God is merciful and all will be forgiven. And what he's going to emphasize now is that even the concept of chesed, mercy, of kindness, of Hashem, all fits in with the absolute system of judgment. And there is no such thing as overlooking. There is forgiveness, but forgiveness does not mean overlooking anything. Nothing is overlooked. And he's going to point out that even with the greatest tzaddikim, who were of the greatest level of spirituality and had the highest merits, their quote-unquote minor infractions were not overlooked and they were held to account. The concept of Hashem's harsh judgments have to be taken in proper perspective. The Gemara says that it makes little difference to Hashem. Hashem is not affected as to whether one slaughters an animal by shechita, the way the Torah says to, or whether one breaks its neck. It doesn't affect Hashem either way. He says the mitzvahs were not given for Hashem's benefit. They were given to refine the human being. So, and the Pasuk says, and if you have committed a sin, what harm have you done to him? There's no way that a person harms Hashem. So, a human being who feels that if he's been offended, he acts out of anger and hostility toward the one who offended him, may try to transfer these ideas of punishment to Hashem. Hashem, well, if you don't listen to what Hashem says, he gets angry at you. That's a completely erroneous anthropomorphization. It's not that Hashem gets angry because you've offended him. Punishment is something inherent within the thing that the person has done, and the system of justice requires that a faulty behavior has its consequences, and there are no exceptions to this. And people in higher places are even held to a higher standard because, for them, a minor infraction is not what it is to someone else. I mean, if you have a very fine garment and you have a small stain on it, that small stain on the fine garment is a much greater consequence than it would be on a pair of work clothes that gets soiled anyway. The Gemara says that Bereshis Bara Elokim, in the beginning Elokim created. Throughout the entire Maase Bereshis, the name by which Hashem is referred to as Elokim. And Elokim is the attribute of Hashem when Hashem operates with the concept of din, of absolute judgment, stern absolute judgment. It isn't until later on that the word B'yayim Asayis Hashem Elokim as the Shemai appears. And the name of Hashem, Yudke Volke, refers to when Hashem is conducting the world with the attribute of Chesed and Rachmin, of kindness and mercy. So the Gemara says, initially, Hashem's intent was that the world should be created with Din, with absolute stern judgment. That he saw that the world could not continue to exist with that kind of harsh judgment, with absolute judgment. Omad v'shitev midas rachmim. So he added on rachmim to din. And all the mefarshim, all the commentaries explain that Hashem does not change his mind. He started off with din, and then later on he said, this isn't going to work, I better change that. He said, that's not the way it works. Hashem is not a human being who changes his mind. The world was created with din and has remained operating with din and operates with stern judgment. The only thing that Rachmim has added on, which was also part of the original intention, was a credit system where one is given an extension and is immediate meeting out of justice is delayed, is postponed. When, as children, when we played Monopoly, there were two ways of playing. One was that there was no owing. If you landed on property and you didn't have the money to pay, you were out of the game. When we wanted the game to last longer, we developed a system of credit. You don't have to pay. You don't have to go out of the game if you can't pay. You can owe. Now, nowhere in the rules of Monopoly does it say that you can owe. This is something that we devised. And owing does not mean that the debt is canceled. It just means that it's postponed. That's how we have to understand Rachamim and Din. There is no cancellation. Someone has done something, whatever it is, there is a consequence to it. And the higher the individual status is, the more serious a minor infraction is, and the more he has to pay for it. And just because he has done an abundance of mitzvahs and has many merits and virtues, that doesn't erase the sin. Now, if one does teshuvah and properly corrects the infraction, then the system of justice, Hashem's system of justice, totally erases the sin. But until such time as teshuvah is done, there is no overlooking, there's no cancellation. All Rachmim does is instead of immediately exacting punishment, that the consequences that Hashem delays should normally happen. So it's not punishment in the sense that Hashem is angry and is going to get after somebody because one has offended him. The harsh things that happen to a person because of the consequences of his behavior are consequences of the act itself. If you were not careful, you were wearing a fine garment and you were not careful with what you were doing and you got it stained, you did it. And that stain is there. Now, if you can do something to remove the stain, fine. So that's the system of din, which is always operative, and rachman fits into din. Now, it's interesting that in Vayitan Lecha, when Yitzchak gives Yaakov the brochus, and later on Esav comes and complains, so he gives Esav brochus also. So to Yaakov he says, V'yitan lecho Elokim. Elokim should give you from the dew of the heaven and from the fat of the land. So he says, Elokim should give this to you. When it comes to Esav, and he gives Esav his blessings, he says, Mishmanei ha'oretz yiyeh meshavecha. Your dwelling place should be from the fat of the land and from the dew of the heaven above. It makes no mention that Elokim should give this to you. So to Yaakov he says, V'yitan lecho Elokim, Elokim should give this to you. And Esav he gives the blessings without saying Elokim should give this to you. So Rashi comments why this is. And Rashi says, Mahu Elokim, why does he say to Yaakov Elokim? In Bedin, it means with absolute justice. Im roi lach, yiten lach. If you deserve it, you will get it. Vim lav, la yiten lach. And if you don't deserve it, you won't get it. It's going to be Elokim will give it to you, meaning with the system of justice. You will get what you deserve.
Avala Esav Amar to Esav, he doesn't mention Elikim. He says, Nishmani Oretz Yemashavacha, you will have the fat of the land. Then Sadik V'Rosha, you don't know whether you're good or whether you're bad, but you're going to get it anyway. Umimenu Lamad Shlomai, Shlomai used this as a indication for his prayers, Kishya Osa Abayis, when he made the Beis HaMikdash. Sidat Filosa, and he organized his prayer before Hashem. And he said, Yisroel Shehu Bala Muna, a Jew who is a believer in Hashem, Umatzdik Olavah Din, and when something bad happens to him, he accepts it as this being just. And even though it's extremely painful and distressful, he knows that this is justice, though there's no injustice in the world. What happened to him somehow fits into Hashem's system of justice, even though we can't understand it. Lo yikra olav taga, and he will not be defiant and rebellious and blasphemous against Hashem. Therefore, he said, Shlomo HaMelech says, v'nosata le'ish kidracho, you will give each person according to his ways, asher teidas levavo, as you understand his heart. That's what Shlomo HaMelech said, referring to Yisrael. Aval nochri, for the heathens, mechusar emunah, they have no belief. Lefikach, he said, Omar, ba'ata tishma ha'shamayim, and you will hear the prayers of the heathens when they pray to you. V'yosisa kechoyla sheyikra lecho, and you will do whatever they ask. Meaning, hanochri, the heathen, bein roi u'bein she'ein roi, whether he's deserving or is not deserving, ten loy, give him what he wants, so that he shouldn't be blasphemous. So you see that to Yaakov he says, look Yaakov, you believe in Hashem, therefore I'm coming to Yitnu Lecha Elokim, if you'll be deserving, you get it, you won't be deserving, you won't get it. Esav gets it whether he's deserving or not, because if he doesn't, he's like an infant who doesn't understand, he starts crying and kicking. So we see that the Midas Hadin is a Midas Hadin actually for Yisrael. It applies specifically for those who believe in Hashem.
So whether it's with Yitzchak or whether it's with Shlomo, whether it's with Yitzchak or whether it's with Shlomo, why do they have to be so good to us?
Why Hashem has to be so good to us? For the same reason that if you have a garment that has a stain, right, and you may have to rub it and cleanse it to get the stain off. Right? That's what it takes.
We're
held to a much higher standard. That's very clear. Now, it's very clear from the Mefarshim, from the commentaries, that the entire system of how Hashem runs the world has to be understood as absolute justice. And it will be because you will listen to these mishpotim. Right? Not only the mitzvahs, but particularly the mishpotim, the laws of din, of justice. Right? And then, this is what Hashem promised, our rewards for the absolute justice. There's a pasuk that says, Navi Haskel V'yadoya, you see, that reflect and come to know me. Ki Hashem, because I Hashem, Oysa Chesed Mishpat. I do Chesed and Mishpat. Knowing Hashem means, knowledge of Hashem means realizing that Hashem conducts everything with Mishpat. There is nothing that deviates from Mishpat. We have a concept of Mishpat that is totally different, and not only are we held to a higher standard, but we also have a concept of Mishpat that is totally different than a secular concept of Mishpat. And what is demanded of us is, if an individual transgresses an avera for which Bezin punishes, in the days of the Bezin there used to be lashings. So the Gemara says, when the Pesuk says, V'nikla achicha le'enecha, and your brother will be embarrassed by having been chastised, punished by this, by the court. So the Gemara says, Kivin Shen Nikola, once he has received his punishment, it must be Achicha, he must be accepted as an equal brother again. Now, In a court system, if an individual were to commit a crime, even if he makes restitution, he's looked upon as a goner. Right? I mean, so he was caught, right? And so he had to pay, right? But he's still a goner. Right? And socially, he's begun to consider it a goner. What the Torah demands of us is that once an individual has done something, has committed a crime, if he has received his punishment for the crime, we are not allowed to consider him to be the sinful person that he had been. We are not allowed to hold that against him. B'kivishen Nikola, once he has received his punishment, it's achicha, he has to be considered a Nikola. Of course, before Hashem, once a person has done tshuva, the event is totally eradicated as though it never occurred. And that does not occur within a human system of justice. So Hashem's system of justice is absolute and far superior to a social system of justice. And actually, from the pasuk of Enikla Ochicha Lenecha, that once a person has received his punishment, he must be considered an equal and is not allowed to be considered a secondary citizen, second-class citizen. There's an indication that Hashem demands of us a system of justice akin to his, rather than the prevailing system of social justice. So the concept of punishment is one which is within the system of din rather than the concept of punishment of I'll get you for what you did. It's not I'll get you. The Gemara tells that when Rabbi Elazar was in his last illness, his students came in to visit him. And he said to them, as a result of his tremendous suffering, he said, there is a great deal of wrath, divine wrath, prevailing in the world. And when his disciples saw him in his suffering, they began to cry. And Rabbi Akiva sat there smiling. And they said to Akiva, why are you smiling at this time? And he said, well, why are you crying? They said, we're crying because we see our Rebbe suffering so much. And he said, well, that's why I'm smiling. He says, if I had seen that our Rebbe has everything going well for him, he is not suffering, not financially, not physically, not emotionally, that everything is well, he said, I would think that perhaps he has received all his divine reward in this world, and that he will be left with nothing in the world to come. Now that I see that they are exacting, that Hashem is exacting suffering from him, I know that the Rebbe is going to have his portion in the world to come intact. When Rebbe Elazar heard this, he says, Akiva, is there anything in the entire Torah that I have failed to fulfill? So Akiva says, what can I do? The Torah says, "Ki tzaddik ein ba'aretz asher yaaseh tov lo yechta." There is no person on earth who does all good and never commits an aver. So what he was saying, Rabbi Elazar, is, look, this too is part of the system of justice. And so that is the demands that Hashem makes of people. So experiencing distress as unpleasant as it is, and sometimes as unfair as it seems, our faith has to override and help us realize that it's all within the divine system of justice. Avram, the patriarch Avram Avinu, who Avram ahuv l'koina, he is the one who is beloved to the Creator. Ashakosov omar alav, and the pasuk refers to him, Avram Oyhavi, my beloved Avram, Hashem says, my beloved Avram. Like Polat min adin, ibne dvorim kalim shalai dikdik bahem. Did not escape judgment for a slight indiscretion. What was a slight indiscretion? Hashem promised him that he would give him the land of Canaan for his descendants as a inheritance. And Avram says, Bamo Eda, how can I know that this will be so? In other words, there was a moment of question as he says, give me a sign. Right? And that was considered a distrust of Avram to Hashem. And Hashem responded to him, Omale HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Chayecho, I swear, Yodea Te Dekigei Yezarach. Now your children will have to go into bondage for 400 years. And the ordeal of the enslavement of Mitzrayim was because Avram had said these two simple words, how can I be sure? When he entered into a pact with Avimelech, and he did it of his own conclusion without having been commanded to do so by Hashem, it was not a mitzvah. So Hashem said to him, Chayecho, now because of this, Shani Mashe v'simchus ponecho shiva doiros, I will delay the rejoicing of your children for seven generations. And the Torah was not given until seven generations later because Avram had of a minor infraction. Yaakov, the patriarch Yaakov, Al-Shechora Abba Berocha, because he became angry when Rochel complained that she did not have children, Shamralai, Rochel said to him, Havali Bonim, she demanded, give me children, otherwise I shall die. And Yaakov said, what are you asking me for? Am I God that can provide the children? And he responded harshly to her. Hashem said to Yaakov, is that the way you respond to someone who's in distress? Because of that, the children of your children of your first wife will have to be subject to her child. In other words, Yaakov was punished for not having responded properly. It says that when Esav met Yaakov, when Yaakov returned from Lavan with his entire family, that he concealed Dina in a box so that Esav would not see her. Why? Because just in case Esav would see how beautiful she was and wanted for a wife. Ulafisha Nosan is Dina Bateva, because he put Dina in a chest, Kideshali Kichel Esav, so that Esav should not desire her. Afobisha Kavanosa Vadahayavalatava, even though his intention was good. I mean, if anybody would have come and asked Ashila, hey, I've got a brother Esav, should I give my daughter to him for a wife? Of course he would have told no. However, even though what he did was right, Achlefisha Mona Chesed Mi'elviv, because he was denying his brother a kindness, and they said that when he closed the chest, he locked it in the chest, he said, good for him. So it wasn't a pure motivation. And in addition to this, although what he did was right, but there was a personal intent of, now I'm going to get back at my brother. Amuf HaMidrash, the Midrash says, Amun HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Lamas Mera'eyu Chosed, someone who keeps kindness, who denies his brother or his friend kindness, meaning, Levikashta Lasiyu Lamo, you denied her to Esav, who was circumcised, Harehi Nisus La'oro, the consequence will be that she will be taken by uncircumcised. Levikashta Lasiyu Derecheta, you did not wish to wed her lawfully, Harehi Nisus Derechisa, she will be wed unlawfully. And this is what, as a result of which, Dina was taken captive by Shem and Hamor, Achita by the Chita. So, Yaakov was punished for doing something that was totally appropriate, right? Because of this one fragment of personal interest that he had, that there was a personal vengeance against him. How history, very difficult to know what history would have been like. Continue next time. Mm-hmm.